You're listening to the Meet the Farmers podcast with me, Ben Eagle. To listen to previous episodes, visit thinkingcountry.com or find the podcast on iTunes by searching for Meet the Farmers. Hello and welcome to episode 11 of Meet the Farmers. While some people who have grown up on a family farm head back home straight away to start work at the age of 16 or 18, others go off and carve a separate path first. This is certainly true of my guest today, who has previously worked as a strategic consultant in news and publishing, and has even sold film rights across the globe. Today, I've travelled up to the heavy claylands west of Peterborough to meet Tom Martin. If you're on Twitter, you might know him as Farmer Tom. Tom has many interests outside of the farm and is involved with the NFU, CLA, the East of England Agricultural Society, and recently, LEAF. He's also involved with his local church, he's a qualified counsellor, and writes in two local newspapers. He's married to Lisa, who's American, and a television producer by trade. Tom, it's great to be here, and thank you so much for speaking to me.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I always ask my guests to start by explaining a bit about their farm and your business.
Great. So we are, as you said, a heavy clay farm. We're predominantly arable. We farm approximately 350 acres, although we farm in partnership with my uncle who has beef cattle. And we have a little bit of grass and where we run sheep during the wintertime to keep me busy. I've been back on the farm for about 2.5 years now. So I refer to myself as a toddler farmer.
Now, you grew up on your family farm.
Yeah.
But then you went away. What are some of your childhood memories?
I loved being on the farm. My childhood memories probably would involve danger most of the time, climbing on bales, getting in the way of tractors, and all those things that now terrify me. Running the farm, that's what I was doing at the time, getting into all kinds of mischief.
No responsibility.
But really, being in a small remote village, there were no other children within 15 years of my age, and certainly no classmates within 5 miles. So it was make your own fun, and that often involved being out on the farm, but never really dreaming that one day I'd be doing the farming.
Did you think of other things, doing other things when you were growing up, or was it for you, no, farming's for me?
I don't know. I've always loved the outdoors. Well, I think we're in a beautiful part of the world, so I've loved being outside. And that was one of my big quandaries coming back to farming, was do I like it or do I love it? And I think to like it, it's like being a sports coach or a vicar or jobs like that where liking it isn't enough. You've got to love it. And that was my fear. I knew I'd like it. I knew I loved being outdoors, but would I love it? And I got three pieces of advice from my dad, or three main pieces of advice. One is don't be a ballet dancer or a racing driver, which I followed. I have to be careful how I say this, but the second is don't marry a horsey woman because however much you earn, you can't afford it. Which I've also managed to do so far. And the third thing was, even if you're desperate to be a farmer, I recommend going and doing something else first, even if it's just working for your neighbour. For me, that involved nearly 15 years working in three different industries before I decided that actually, I really wanted to come back. And I think it's important to want to come back rather than to be asked to come back or to feel compelled to in any way.
Take me through that sort of next chapter of your life once you've left the farm and you've had quite an exciting career before you've come here. So I'd like to know a little bit more about that.
So I finished my degree and I'd studied natural sciences because I was interested in it, but I felt that I didn't have the nous to get into business and to get up in business as I wanted to. So I did a business management master's, which I really enjoyed, really getting into the nitty-gritty of the business. I think when you grow up on a farm, you learn lots about farm life, but you don't necessarily, and on our farm, I didn't learn much about the business side of things. So it was really interesting to go away and study that. I then enjoyed the business side so much that I went into strategic consultancy. I worked for a company who specialised in corporate benchmarking or competitive intelligence, which to you and me is more like corporate espionage.
Explain that.
we would be approached by companies who wanted to know what their competitors were doing, and it was my job to find out. To quite a high level, a specific level, we were working in the nuclear industry, we were working in telecoms, banking. It was very interesting, but actually I felt it didn't really sit well with me, and whilst I quite enjoyed the challenge of it, I didn't want to be soliciting or getting information for competitors, that didn't feel, it didn't really sit right, although I like the strategic side of things. At that point, actually, my grandmother died, and I moved back to the farm for a couple of months and then took a job locally working in news and magazines. So I worked in distribution for a company that worked with the BBC, with EMAP. So I was working with Heat Magazine and Radio Times and BBC Wildlife and Auto Car and What Car and all kinds. But again, a very, very different industry, but very interesting working in logistics and that side of things.
I'm assuming you took some lessons from that period that yeah. you can now use now.
Yeah, I think there were some key learnings. I worked in the retail side of things. And I think at the time, coming back to farm shops and having that kind of experience, we were very customer focused because we were making sure that the magazines were in the right place for the right people, and learning things about how people behave when they shop, which you wouldn't think is particularly applicable to growing wheat or finishing sheep. But actually, when you get into the retail side of things and understanding people, I think that's really important, which I think farmers probably need to do these days.
And moving forward, we're all told that we have to have our marketing now has to improve.
I actually think, looking more broadly, that there's been a great divorce between the farmer in the UK and our consumer. They're the people who buy our products. And whereas in other countries, there'll be a lot closer relationship with farmers. You know, obviously in developing countries, a lot of people are farmers. And if we look across at the States, I feel like most of the people I've met there aren't farmers, but they feel like they're farmers. They have an affinity with their farmers. They're proud of their farmers. And I think in the UK, there is some pride. But actually, I think a lot of people just don't know what's going on. So having worked in news and magazines and then moving through film and doing a lot of marketing with that side of things, not myself, but actually getting an insight into other people who are doing some great marketing. I was moving numbers around a spreadsheet. But I got to see that side of things. And so now I'm really passionate that customers get to see what happens the other side of the farm gate. That's really my mantra, is helping people to see the other side of the farm gate, because I think it's really shrouded in mystery. And if we're not prepared to tell our story, then somebody else will tell the story. And it'll be a story of hectares being sprayed with thousands of litres of yellow stuff, or things being killed, or these, what would they be? They'd be untruths. It'd be fake news these days. But if we're not prepared to tell our story, then the story is told. It's just we don't get the input.
Yeah, and that's absolutely clear. I mean, I follow you on Twitter. You're very active
there. Thank you very much.
A very good advocate for shouting the voice of the farming industry and food production generally. Just before I arrived here this afternoon, you were showing around the Marshall Papworth students. Could you briefly, I know we're going off topic a bit there, but could you talk a bit about that, please?
Very happy to go off topic. I'm almost an off topic kind of person.
So am I. It's one of these podcasts.
I think we're going to get on very well. Well, I'm very happy to talk about Marshall Papworth. I actually work with a number of organisations who share similar passions to me. And one of them is the East of England Agricultural Society. They have a number of different things that they do and initiatives that falls under their umbrella. And one of them is the Marshall Papworth organisation. Marshall Papworth is a person, but is also a charity. And they bring half a dozen, seven, eight students from developing countries, predominantly Africa, but elsewhere in the world as well. And they bring them across to the UK to study in UK agricultural colleges for a year. But during that time, they don't want to just give them that experience. They want to maximise, effectively, their return on investment, going back to a business term. Yeah. They want to maximise their return on investment. So they bring them out to farms. They take them and give them exposure at all kinds of levels within government, and lots of experience of new technologies and ways that they can look at different ways to farm and bring that back to where they're from. So today, I had the great pleasure of hosting eight students who came around the farm for a couple of hours. And we looked at absolutely everything from trial plots to our neighbour's sheep to black grass. And really, they're just full of questions. So, and again, I'm really happy to give people a look inside what goes on.
So let's go back to the story. Take me to that moment where you thought, right, I've got my career and I could carry on down this path.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could go back to the family farm, and that's my decision. When did you make that decision?
What was it like, and why did you make it?
There wasn't a Damascene moment. It wasn't there wasn't a voice from heaven.
I was wishing there was.
But I do actually, we had a series of conversations with Mum and Dad. There would be implications of me coming back to the farm. Things would have to change in certain ways, and we'd have to work out if I even could, if it was even economically viable. But my mum was particularly keen at discouraging me from coming back because she wanted to know that I really wanted to come back and I wasn't going to be a farmer's son who came back, had an awful time, fell out with Dad and left 3 or 4 years later and, you know, with a wake of devastation. But it really came about in a conversation we had out for a walk one day. As I say, my internal dialogue was, do I like this or could I love it? I've got to be able to love it. And really, is there a space for me? And I think probably Dad's thinking was, can I make a space for Tom? Can I offer him something to come back for? And am I happy to give up some or all of what I'm doing in order for him to come back in? I've seen cases where that hasn't happened and it doesn't end well. There's no humility in this, but it's very much to do with Dad rather than me. I always say to any other farmer's sons or daughters who have come back to the family farm, your job is not to be an idiot. And really, the success or failure is down to your parents. And can they, are they ready to step back a little bit? Are they ready to step into a new venture and allow you to have a space there? Are they ready to relinquish control a little bit and let you make mistakes? And I pay credit to Dad wherever I can.
So what's life been like in those 3 years since? Take me through some highs and lows.
Well, there have really been lots of highs, but I'll start with the lows because okay. that's always the interesting one. I think we've probably had some harsh words 2 or 3 times. We do talk about stuff. We meet every single day, work very closely together, but I get a lot of autonomy as well. So I'm not striving to do more on my own, to be more independent, to make decisions, because actually I have that great luxury. I think probably, yeah, two or three very quickly ironed out misunderstandings, which is almost boring.
Give me something here.
Yeah, gosh.
No, that's brilliant.
What can I can't offer you, I don't know if I, a little tidbit or something like that. No, I just think we've been really lucky. I left aged 18, 19, 20, 21 as the boy, and I've been allowed to come back in as a peer and as an equal, and that is so enriching, but also I've been allowed to come back in as somebody who's not exactly the same, not in the same mould. So we do lots of things that perhaps we haven't done in the past, and one of the things I'm passionate about, as I've mentioned, is helping people to understand what happens the other side of the farm gate, and I think particularly that's not only children and consumers, but that's politicians as well. So we've had MEP visits, we've had our local Member of Parliament has been around. We had Jane King a week or so ago, who was brilliant, of course, from the chief exec of AHDB, and I take any opportunity to invite them round. And so we've had some fascinating people around our tea table that I don't think we would have had a while ago. And for me, that's a really important part of my job as a farmer, actually. But that's very much come in from my previous experience. You know, you're a farmer, you just grow stuff and then sell it. Actually, no, you're a producer. You've got a customer. You've got a regulator. You know, you've got trading relationships. And if you can try and influence and operate at all those levels, then absolutely. And I don't really want to come in and let the industry waft over me. I want to come in and grab hold of the industry and drive it in the best way possible. I'm really passionate about farming, about food production. And I think it probably has more potential than any other industry, and that is a negative because I think it's got a long way to come from in the depths of farming, but it's also a huge positive because, gosh, the world is our oyster.
And so it's real highs from the last few years.
Real highs. Seeing the yield meter tip 11 tonnes very occasionally when it kind of flicks over there in a field of wheat. I try and take a photo of it every time. Sunrises and sunsets. Hard weather. I love the elements. I'd never helped a lamb to be born before I came back. My goodness me, the miracle of life never leaves me, and I'm sure never will. I think being a presence in my local community. I live and work in the area, and I love that as well.
You're a family partnership.
Yeah.
So can you take me through that family element of the business?
Yeah, so we are the three of us in the partnership, mum, dad and me. Mum is, she would describe herself as a very small supporting role, but we actually know how important she is.
Yep.
We try never to forget that. My goodness me, very, very important. And also very, very important at communication between me and dad as well, which is really useful to have that input. But dad and I do the farming and do the kind of main business decisions, and that's really useful. We have an apprentice who started working with us a year and a half ago, so I've been back a year. He is excellent. My goodness me. He's 19 now, so of course there are things he can't do and things that he's got to learn, but he cares. He wants to learn. He will be taught. He wants to try new things. He's happy to struggle, and he doesn't mind breaking a sweat and getting out of his tractor. Although that can be hard sometimes, but not everyone. None of us want to get out of our tractor too much if we can help it. So he's been a great support. And I got some great advice from a really young farmer called Jack Stillwell, who was speaking at the East of England Farming Conference a few weeks ago. I chaired the session on what they called Farmers with Flair. I like hanging around with them because I think it might rub off. But he was saying, am I working, what am I doing within my work? Am I working as a stockman? My value is £15 an hour. Am I working as a manager? My value is £50 an hour. Or am I working as a strategic investor with a value of £500 an hour? And if I can't be doing, I can't be a strategic investor the whole time, but are there times when I can bring somebody else in to be a stockman to allow me to make decisions that will have a more important business impact? And so that's really stuck with me, and how I work well with Joe, who's our apprentice, to enable him to compliment me and actually release me, to make me free to do other things. I did a course with the Worshipful Company of Farmers. I'm really passionate about farmer learning. I think if you can't spend time or money to invest in yourself, then you're losing your biggest asset. But I did a course, a three-week course with the Royal Agricultural University at Cirencester, but actually run by the Worshipful Company of Farmers. And there were 16 farmers there, 15 people who I have the highest respect for and are utterly brilliant than me. And we all came away thinking, yeah, half a day off the farm is a really valuable half a day, rather than falling into the trap of, I'm a farmer. If I could be doing anything on the farm, that's more important than anything else I possibly could be doing. Guilt-tripping ourselves, and in 3 years I'm already falling into that. Well, I really should be on the farm, or I really should be just... There's probably something to be done. Actually, let me step away. Can I bring £50 an hour or £500 an hour's worth of value into the farm by making a really important decision well? Or do I just get caught up with being a stockman and then make a snap decision, oh gosh, we've got to buy that combine, or we really should think about such and such, without the planning?
That sort of broadly links into my next question, which is, do you have any farming heroes or people in or out of farming who've influenced you throughout your life?
Well, I mentioned Jack Stillwell. I think he's fast becoming, he's only about 23, 24, maybe 25. Maybe I'm doing him misjustice, but he's not been in farming long. And my goodness me, he's becoming a hero of mine. But what he won't be able to do is knock my number one farming hero off the top slot. And he's always very embarrassed when I say this, but Tom Bradshaw, who did a fantastic Nuffield paper, SOS, Soils, Sunshine and Organic Matter. And really, I've taken that to heart with what we do on the farm.
Yeah. Have Tom in the next podcast.
Oh, fantastic. Gosh, well,
I'm hoping for you, Tom.
I hope he gets to listen to this and is not as embarrassed as he usually is, but I've certainly learned a lot from him. But I've also learned a lot from him about engaging in politics and being involved at different levels as well. So he's definitely pro-agri is my farming hero. But then also I would say within the industry, it's a very disparate industry. I've worked in consulting, I've worked in media, and I've worked in news and magazines, and it is the most disparate industry. The difference between the very best and the ones right at the back is vast. And I think I thought, probably as a lot of people did, that farmers were all a bit the same, you know, and you're just farmers. There are some people like that, of course. But there are some people doing some fascinating and brilliant stuff. You know, there's I work with Soil Fertility Services, and there's a guy called Simon Cowell, not the Simon Cowell, doing some outstanding work with his soils down in the southeast. Jake Freestone, I introduced him the other day, and they don't call him number one farmer Jake for nothing. And it's absolutely true. He's fascinating, but he does some great stuff. But he's very considered about it as well. So There are lots of farming heroes out there. But again, if you don't step away from the farm, you don't have any exposure to them. So you've got to step away from the coalface and stop rating yourself at £15 an hour and start rating yourself at £500 an hour.
Exactly. And now, away from the farm, you are a pretty busy man. Let's say that. You're involved in, have I named all the acronyms that you're involved in? I could be here all day. But can you tell me a bit about your involvement with organisations like the NFU, like the CLA, the East of England Agricultural Society?
Absolutely. We are here at the East of England Showgrounds, so let's start there. They have two aims within their mission statement. That is to share knowledge between farmers of new innovation and technology, and to communicate farming to the general public. Well, that's pretty much what I want to do. So that is completely aligned with what I'm passionate about. And I've probably the areas that I get involved in are communicating to the general public, which I probably find I'm a little bit more, I have a kind of greater affinity to, or perhaps the work I've done before leads me in that direction. So Kids Country is amazing. They bring 7,000 school children in once a year to understand all facets of farming and do dozens of other things. I'm taking a tractor into a school in January. They do tons of stuff. My goodness me, what a great organisation with big plans for the future as well. The NFU. Well, I think the NFU is a little bit like farming in general. I think it's quite disparate in places. I'm a big fan of the NFU, but again, I think there's big potential to do more, greater, better, stronger, faster, and particularly in the current climate. I'm sure every conversation I have end up being a Brexit conversation, and I don't intend for this to become, but so, in where we are at the moment...
Yeah, Brexit is bound to meet the farmers at the moment.
Good. I'm very pleased. I'm very pleased.
Talking about that.
But certainly the climate we're in, and that's not just Brexit, actually. There's lots and lots of other things happening, and I've mentioned technology already, but there's lots and lots of things happening that are going to change. Change is the key constant in farming.
And you've recently started working with Leaf for what I think is just an inspired idea, which is one of those things that you think, oh, why isn't that already be happening before, which is called FaceTime a Farmer.
Yeah.
Take me through that. Where did the idea start? How does it work?
Well, it really touches two organisations. So three organisations. Cultivate, who are the under 40s, the kind of the younger arm, the next generation arm of the East of England Agricultural Society, had a competition to win a place at the Rural Agricultural Society of the Commonwealth Biennial Conference in Singapore, which was September, October 2016. Fantastic conference, fascinating. I thought all my travelling would be done when I went into farming and I'd probably get as far as cereals and that's it. But that certainly wasn't the case. And so I found myself in Singapore a year ago with lots of people. They were chief executives of big organisations. They were next generation delegates, people from all over the world. But some of the really fascinating input came from the big shows in America. We think that the Royal Welsh Show, which I think has about 300,000 visitors, is a big show. Of course, everything's bigger in Texas. They have 4.2 million people visiting their showground. And that is a window into farming and agriculture and the food production business that is just breathtaking. And they run FaceTime a Farmer, but they have a media suite. They have a screen on the wall and you come in, and if you want to ask a farmer a question, they've got two or three farmers lined up in their field and you can ask a farmer a question at their state fair. But when they said FaceTime a Farmer, I didn't think about that. I thought, my goodness me, I'd look around, everybody in this room's got a smartphone in their pocket. We've all used Skype. We're all very comfortable with placing a video call. And actually, I think one of the biggest opportunities, or again, we're looking at it on the flip side. When I say opportunity, I sometimes mean what hasn't happened so far, a failing, is that we're very good at showing people, doing shows. It's one day a year. Come and look at my farm, Open Farm Sunday. Fantastic venture. One day a year. We bring 7,000 children onto the showground here. Fantastic one day a year, but it's a snapshot. And actually, how do you build up an affinity, a relationship, and an understanding on once a year? You know, the warm, fuzzy feeling disappears after a few weeks. So actually, I thought, no, this is a way that actually farmers and school classes can communicate directly. And that should be happening every week, every couple of weeks, once a month. And so I posted on my Farmer Tom Facebook page, I don't suppose anybody interested in this, and went to bed and woke up, and it seemed quite a few people were interested in it. Lots of farmers saying, hey, I'd do this, but tons of school teachers saying, and parents saying, yep, my school, I'd like to do this, my class, my child, I want this input. And then I began to really see the value. So we've spent I spent spring and summer term just really piloting it, testing it. And it's been easier than I thought it would be. You know, I thought, oh gosh, I'm going to be speaking through my little phone to a class of 20 kids, and how's it going to be? It's really, really fantastic. I email the teacher on a Monday or a Tuesday before our call, once a fortnight on a Friday. I say, hey, what are you up to in the curriculum at the moment? What are you learning? And she might reply and say, we're doing natural selection, or we're studying animal classifications, or global warming, or different farming types, or all kinds of elements of geography, or nature, or history. And then so I think, well, okay, you're studying natural selection this week. I'll go to a point on the farm between two fields where I've got two different types of rapeseed of canola. And I can talk to them. Oh, I'm looking at which is the variety I need on the farm, which is going to be better suited to me. Well, that's natural selection, and it brings it alive. And I think when the teachers are reinforcing learning as well, they're learning over a fortnight about different things, and then the children not only hear it again, but they see it again and they experience it again. They ask questions, and they ask some great questions. It's been fascinating. I've stood on top of a muck heap. I've shown them a lamb with hypothermia that was on death's door that we managed to bring back. I've stood them out there in the absolute pouring rain. I've shown them the conservation areas of our farm. We've looked at cattle. We've looked at seed time. We've looked at we've managed to get a little bit of harvest in even, which was quite remarkable. Very dry year. That was probably the one sad thing is we don't get to see too much harvest. But they've built up a relationship with me and actually not with me, but with farming and with where their food comes from. And we've spoke about Red Tractor, and we've talked about what they're looking for in the supermarket, and we've spoken about the difference between cane sugar and sugar beet sugar, and we've spoken about the difference between olive oil and rapeseed oil, and different welfare within meat and various different things. And they're remarkable. And they're not worried about an animal that might be killed. I think we as grown-ups are worried about that. Oh, my goodness me. Are they going to cry? They say, OK. One of the questions was, do your sheep go to the butcher, or do they go to the market, or are they for wool? I suppose they go to the butcher. Oh, OK. Next question was, do you have a gun? So, fascinating question, and I had to just think very carefully about how I answered that. But really interesting. They wanted to really understand what goes on in the countryside. Yeah. And, hey, I want to show them, and I think it's part of our job and my job to show them.
So where does it go from here? How do you roll it out more widely? What's the next step?
Well, that's the final organisation. I was really looking for somebody who could, because it takes very little work, but there's administration, and I really don't have the time to do that. I don't have the capacity, the capability to do that. And that's where Leaf have stepped in. I spoke with a number of really great organisations, and several of them are really excited. Leaf, I think, have the reach. They have the size, and I think they dream big enough to really support this. And certainly the work they've done in the last few weeks has been great. They've been contacting a number of farmers and schools. And the really interesting thing, actually, Ben, is that I thought they'd struggle to get farmers. I have to say, I thought it would be farmers that would be a little bit more nervous or perhaps reluctant. They're looking for teachers and classes. That is what they're looking for. And so obviously, and I've said to farmers, it's exactly the same as I've said to you, you've got a smartphone in your pocket, you've made a Skype call before, you're on your own territory talking about stuff you know everything about. What could go wrong? Buy yourself a pair of earphones, make sure you can hear what they're saying. Done. So Leaf have been really good, they really supported that.
Now, one of the interesting things that I now know about you is that you are a trained counsellor.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting in terms of a lot of talk in the certainly the last 12, 18 months, couple of years about mental health in the farming sector, looking after yourself, looking after your own mental health, looking after the mental health of others and looking out for others as well. And there's actually a hashtag which we have on Twitter, which is hashtag farmer mental health.
Yeah.
If you want to follow that. But yeah, I wonder, coming from that context, how that helps you as a farmer and running a rural business.
I think it's, for me, it's another, it's a soft skill which is, I use every day. I studied to be a counsellor. I got my qualification. I've never actually practiced as a counsellor, but I've used it informally every day. I really enjoyed the learning element of it. And a great teacher once said to me, you know, when you need to look at your life, you look at goal, which is your gifts, what others say about you, what you aspire to and what you love doing. And so I wrote these things down. She said, you can take an hour if you want to. I said, it's about me. Come on. If you don't know about yourself, I can write it down straight away. And as I looked at these things, it pointed towards actually counselling. I thought, well, goodness me, why have I not learnt this skill or kind of honed it or got a qualification? So I did a 3-year course, and it's just been fascinating. It covers communication, it covers listening, it covers understanding motivation, behaviours, and it's helped me to understand myself and to understand other people as well. So it's really, really useful. I think farming can be really tough. It can be a really tough environment. Things can go wrong. You can feel like everything you try fails, and you can be really isolated. And I think particularly as we get into the modern age, where you think you're more connected, but actually you can be more lonely. People say you can live in London and feel lonely. I think I completely understand that. And I think you can have social media, you can have all kinds of things going on and feel very alone. And I think it's part of our role as farmers, our responsibility as human beings, as friends, to actually ask the hard questions. And I went through a very, very difficult patch in my life a little while ago. And one of the things I learned from that is when people said to me, how are you? I would say, oh, fine. Or I would say, not bad. Or getting by, because I didn't want to say I'm great. But, you know, so now when someone says to me, oh, yeah, not bad, I say, oh, what's the difference between not bad and good? And we have fascinating conversations just because you ask that second question. And I think we should be confident and emboldened to ask that second question, actually. Yeah. And with mental health in isolated, high pressure and tiring, physically and mentally draining environments being a really key issue, I think we should be. And I love the initiatives, again, supported by the Farming Press and the NFU are very good at that with that as well. So mental health is a good one, and then farm safety is another one. And I think, yes, we should be addressing this as an industry. We should be talking about it. So, yeah, it's been really useful having that insight. And it's something that I don't use formally, but I use every single day.
Now you seem a really relaxed guy, but I'm sure you must get stressed. Now and then, what do you do completely? So this is non-farming, non-political, non-writing, none of that.
Yeah.
What do you do to relax?
I may appear calm, but I am type 1, alpha personality, and I am 100 miles an hour if I have to go that slow. But otherwise, everything's at a high pace, and I'm let's get on, come on, let's do it, go. But you're right, it's really important to unwind. As I said earlier, I love being outdoors. And actually, I still love walking the farm, even though I can see, and I remember my dad saying this, I can see things that need doing. I'm still actually able to relax. And I love our conservation areas on the farm. Actually, I would describe us as conservation farmers. And so those are some of my proudest parts of the farm, the work we're doing with our wild environment. And our wild bird strips, our pollen and nectar mixes, our woodland. I take great joy in doing that and being outside. Through our church, I have great support from our small group. We meet once a week, and that's great because again, it's people who ask that second question: how are you doing? Not bad. Oh, you were good last week. How are you? You know, what's happened? And I think that's really, really important as well. And I try and do a little bit of sport, although that seems to be less and less frequent.
You're injured at the moment.
I am injured at the moment by trying to catch up with people half my age on the football pitch, with some very mixed success. But yeah, that's really how I try to relax. And I suppose, do you know, it's the different rhythms I think when you're on the farm all the time, your rhythm is the same all the time. And even just stepping away, yesterday I was here at the showground at CropTech, and it's a different rhythm. It's doing something different. And yes, a change is as good as a rest. It doesn't mean never take a holiday. Holidays are really important, and farmers, absolutely, we need to learn that you're not a bad farmer if you step away from the farm and take a break. But I do think keeping variety is actually enables me to recharge as well. And having a very understanding wife.
It's important.
Yeah, I think peace at home is really key.
I asked you before I came to give me three farming issues that you think are the most important at the moment, and you said, I'll list them here, number one, that the current government doesn't appear to recognise the value of food production.
Okay.
Two, that over the past few decades, farming has become an incredibly disparate industry, you mentioned that earlier, with some excellent farmers, but many businesses cannot or will not focus on profitability. And three, there's a huge divorce between the consumer and the farmer. So let's take those in turn.
I think government not recognising the value of food production, I suppose it comes back to some of the things we've discussed previously about perhaps not understanding what's going on in the countryside and what's going on farm. I think there's been lots of examples of that recently. I'm not sure where the science is on neonics, but I do know that when we can't use them on our farm, as is the case at the moment, I have to spray a lot of insecticide, which I detest doing. And I think that kind of broader understanding is very difficult. I see lots of moments when we have politicians out on the farm when they say, oh, you know, pesticides are bad. And I say, oh, but look how this has enabled us to improve our soil and work with our soil biology and how that helps the ground nesting birds. And all of a sudden, oh, gosh, now I kind of see how that all works together. And there is no isolated issue. There's nothing you can deal with in complete isolation from anything else in the countryside. Everything relates and interacts with everything else because it's a living dynamic system. And I think there are a number of things within food production that our government perhaps hasn't recognised the value of. I think some of that is our fault. I think for a long time we've banged on about self-sufficiency. And again, when I was in Singapore, that's a country that is ranked number three in the world for food security. 1% of their land area is agriculture. They supply between 1 and 3% across different sectors of agriculture of their own food, and yet their food security is number three in the world because of their trade links and the way they operate with other countries. So self-sufficiency isn't, or perhaps shouldn't be, the goal. Maybe food security should be, and how are we communicating that to our government?
Farmers not focusing on profitability?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fascinating few years with subsidies. I have been a fan of subsidies. I am certainly a fan of subsidies at the moment because our business would not be viable, if I'm being really honest, without subsidies. I am doing everything I can to work to make sure that we are going forward.
Can you give me some examples?
Oh, I'm absolutely fanatical about costs. So coming in from other industries, I worked in sales, so I could change my selling price. My goodness me, absolutely. You can't. The two big variables in farming are weather and world markets, and I can't do anything about them. That impacts my output. But what I can do is impact on my inputs. So we used to have all our contracting done by a contractor. We spent £20,000 a year doing that. We bought a second-hand sprayer for £23,000. And I do the spraying in-house now, and we make savings on that. There are lots of other areas that we've been able to look at. Now we've actually looked at numbers, we've been able to look at and find some savings. And there have been areas where we thought we've got to spend more money. I don't want to take away from the idea that farming is a way of life. I think it's a beautiful way of life. But I think if it doesn't survive as a business, then should it survive? And I think our subsidy system probably has kept every farm alive. But I think life and death is really important in the natural cycle of things, but also in the business cycle of things. So yes, some businesses should be allowed to die. You know, looking at that brutally, and probably for many years they haven't, and that just sharpens us up. One of the industries that has surprised me, if I'm being very honest, but really wowed me, are the dairy farmers. Crikey, they know their costs down to the penny. They've had to, because prices. And as you know, tons of different issues affecting dairy farmers over the last few years. The poor guys have had a really hard time, but they know their prices to the penny. And I thought as an arable farmer, we pretty much know our costs. Nothing like that. And so I want to learn from the dairy farmers and be a lot more forensic.
And then finally, this relationship between the consumer and the farmer.
Having lived in London for 10 years, I love speaking to my friends back there. They can't get over the fact that farmers are all over Twitter. They think that's amazing because, of course, farmers in their mind, they're either stinking rich thanks to subsidies driving around in a Range Rover, or they're chewing a piece of straw and they're a bit stupid. And actually, I don't know many farmers. I'm sure some farmers, a small number, fall into either of those categories. But most farmers are absolutely not like that at all. And they have no idea. And the interesting thing is, they want to know. They really are genuinely interested, and they do want to know. People are interested in their food now, and they want to know about the production, and they want to know about where their food comes from. But then they don't even know where to start. And I think that's really, really key for us. It is part of our job. And it is not... I wrote an article recently, and I said it is not... You know, if you say, well, the NFU should do that, it's like saying, you know, if you've got naughty children and you just blame the teachers, they should do that. Actually, it begins at home. We've got to be better at talking to people at the coffee shop, at the train station, in the pub, when online, when things come up, having those real, honest conversations, and presenting our amazing industry in the way it should be. I mentioned earlier, you know, otherwise someone else will present it that way, in a different way.
I wasn't going to talk about Brexit. But it's linked, but it's not about Brexit.
Go on.
Okay, so we will have a new British agricultural policy coming up at some point once these people have actually worked out what's happening.
Possibly,
For your particular farm business here,
yeah.
If there was one thing that could help you from a business point of view, what would it be and why?
I went to a young farmer's ideas meeting with DEFRA a little while back. And they were talking about, and I went to a similar event with the CLA actually, and the almost a similar thing came at both of them, which was, why don't for 1 year we just scrap the subsidy, put it all into rural broadband, and just do that, get it sorted, get it like the best, the countries in the world at the best. I thought, gosh, well, that, you know, rural broadband is a real issue that holds back a lot of rural businesses, including farming, and where could we be? How could we better use our technology that we already have, our smartphone capability, if that one little thing was solved? Well, I don't think that's the one thing I'd ask for, but if that was a magic pill, that would make my life a lot easier and possibly our farming a lot more effective.
What are your plans for the future?
Are we talking farming, or are we talking...
We're talking farming.
Let's great.
Let's keep it straight.
Where are you going on holiday this year?
tell me that as well if you want.
Very boring. I'm going on holiday, hopefully, to the Oxford Farming Conference at the NFU annual meeting. I think I took away quite a few things from the course I went on with the Worshipful Company. I think we've got to get bigger or get better. I think our business in future won't be big enough to continue as it is with the way price pressures and global trading is going. I think we perhaps need to look at potentially taking on more land if we can, although that's very difficult. And perhaps then we look at the route of getting better. We've begun to sell a little bit of our lamb direct to customer, but is there anything else we can do? Can we go into a joint venture with our neighbours? Can we collaborate better with other people? As I said, I am obsessive about costs. Apart from my mobile phone bill, which seems to go up year on year, but obsessive over costs, really. And so can we get as much organic matter and nutrients onto our land for as little as possible? That's a big focus for me. And I think what I want to do is continue to be a voice for farming as well. And that's within farming and outside farming. I've set myself a target of becoming president of the NFU.
He said it now.
It's a big hairy goal, as my old boss used to say.
We all need them.
He was a large Scotsman. He said, "You need a big hairy goal, Tom." absolutely, I think that's an industry. That is an organisation that has huge potential to influence. And if people need to put their cap into the ring, and so you know, hey, let's get on and get up. There are other great organisations. I work a bit with the CLA. I mentioned that. And they are fantastic at lobbying. They're really, really very good. And a number of other things as well. So maybe that's an organisation to look at getting more involved in. And then on the educational side of things, LEAF are doing some fantastic stuff there. Merger with FACE, it adds, you know, the sum of the two is greater than the whole. And I think there's huge potential with the East of England Agriculture Society here. So I want to be a part of that.
One final thing, this is a new thing for Meet the Farmers, which I've stolen off Will Evans. I'm sorry, Will. but I like it. So I've got a few quick fire questions.
Great, okay.
Just to finish. Favourite film of all time?
Oh, gosh, is this a... The Last Samurai.
Favourite book or a book that has influenced you?
I've just read a book called The Third Plate by Dan Barber, who's a kind of farm-to-fork chef. Really, really interesting. Hasn't changed exactly how we farm, but changed the way I think about food. Very interesting, highly recommended.
If you could meet anyone alive now or in the past, who would it be and why?
I think I would meet... gosh, there's so many people. There are so many great... Wouldn't Mandela be amazing to talk to? But then you know, I'd like to meet is it Eyre Street, the guy used to write so beautifully about agriculture from the 1930s. What a fascinating person to talk to. Or Turnip Townsend.
Yeah. You can only have one.
Okay, I'm going to go with one then. I'm going to go with Coke of Norfolk.
Cool. Favorite fruit or vegetable?
I've always said Monge too, but I think I'm changing as I get older. Can I just say Monge too?
Say Monge too. Go for it.
Yeah.
Jezza or May?
May.
French or Saunders?
Is there an option three?
Tom or Jerry?
Tom, of course.
Posh or Bex?
Oh, gosh.
I'm sorry about
this. It's a race to the bottom. I think I'd get as lovely as Posh is, I think I'd get far too irritated with her. It's got to be a night on the beers with Bex.
Okay, this with Bex. What household chore do you absolutely hate doing? Or are you the perfect house husband?
I'm certainly not the perfect house husband. But I don't think there's anything I hate doing.
Okay.
Probably dusting and that kind of stuff. Relatively benign.
And finally, if you could learn to do anything, what would it be and why?
It would be to be very high level at the piano or the guitar. I have such admiration for people who can just sit down at the piano or pick up a guitar. I play the guitar a bit myself and I'm lukewarm. but I have huge respect for people who can do that. It's a great talent.
Brilliant, great. We'll stop there. Thank you so much, Tom.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much indeed.